Avos Perk Dalet Mishnah Yud Base. This is 4:12, and in some Mishnayos it's 4:10. We now reach Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir, also one of the five of the latter Talmidim of Rebbe Akiva. He was said to be the greatest of his generation in terms of his ability, his reasoning ability, if you will, as an Okir Harim, an uprooter of mountains, and he was recognized as the greatest as such. His set of traditions, which he got from Rabbi Akiva, are the set which is the backbone of the Mishnah. The rule is that the Stam Mishnah, any Mishnah which doesn't have a specific attribution to a particular Tana, it can be assumed to be a teaching of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir lived a pretty complex life, and aside from being sort of like that leading Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, he also was a Talmud of Elisha ben Avuya, who is a famous apostate, a heretic in the Gemara, who started out as a big Rav, the teacher of Reb Meir, and ended up being totally not from. But Reb Meir continued to study under him, claiming he could, take the good and rid himself of the chaff. And his Rebbe, that teacher, Elisha ben Avuya, is known as Acher, the other guy, the other one. Rebbe Meir himself is often referred to as Acherim, others, as in others, not giving a credit to Rabbi Meir's dissenting opinion, but just calling him Acherim, other people say. The reason for that could be his affiliation with Elisha ben Avuya. It could be that it's connected to a different story where at one point Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Nassan essentially attempted to assert authority over the Sanhedrin and sort of Rabbi Meir to become potentially the Nasi in place of the younger Rabbi Shimon Gamliel II. That was the son of Rabbi Gamliel of Yavna, the father of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the author of the Mishnah, and that was essentially a failed attempt, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel got the better of Rabbi Meir and ended up essentially kind of kicking him out of the Beis Midrash. Rabbi Meir sort of eavesdropped from the windows, but ultimately Rabbi Meir is no longer, he's become sort of anonymous. He is referred to as Acherim. Rabbi Nassan is called Yesh Omrim, those who say for that matter. And Rabbi Meir ultimately kind of goes into self-imposed exile for that and perhaps other reasons as well to Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey. So he sort of ends his life sort of in a sort of estranged way. But that's the story of Meir. He was married to Hanani ben Trajan's daughter, Bruria. Bruria, the greatest Talmud al-Chacham of Talmudic times, for sure. His wife, and she had a difficult life all to herself. In any case, so that is the background here of Reb Meir. So Reb Meir, in this Mishnah, seems to say not too much that's innovative. The Mishnah says, Reb Meir, Reb Meir, hevi mema'at be'esek, one should reduce his amount of work, va'asok b'Torah, and then fill the extra time with learning Torah. V'hevi shefal ruach b'fnei chol adam, a person should be exceedingly, of lowly spirit, meaning of humble spirit, without ego, in front of every person. Vim batalta min haTorah, yesh lecha batalim harbe kenegdecha. If you are idle and annul the Torah, not learning when you could, so then yesh lecha batalim harbe. There are many batalim. This is a funny word. Batel would be an adjective, and sometimes you can also, as a verb, you can be batel, annul something. Here, batalim is turning into a noun. Things that keep you annulled, if you will, annullers. Vimamalta b'Torah, if you indeed exert yourself in the study of Torah, yesh lo sachar harbe liten lach, he, Hashem, has ample, plentiful reward to give you. That's the Mishnah. Now, right away, the first thing we have to ask is, when he says, hevi ma'at be'esek v'asok b'Torah, this seems pretty not new to us, right? We've already had in the base of the previous mission, we had Mavatel es haTorah b'Me'osher. We talked about that. Back in the first parak, we had Shammai who said, Oseh Saras Chakva, make your Torah fixed study. And the second parak, we had Hillel, second parak of Avos, we had Hillel who said, V'lo kol amarba b'schora machkim. If you spend your time working, you won't be able to get wise. So, what's he coming to add here? That you should, minimize your work and study Torah and be involved in Torah. So a possible answer is that this is the first time we're suggesting a person should actively not just be koveya zmanim, in other words, not just good enough to have fixed time for Torah study, not good enough to even fill every spare moment you have with Torah study. You have to actually reduce the amount of work and replace that with some Torah study. The idea, I think, would be you are expressing and demonstrating your love for Torah over all else, even if you love your work, and work is fine and good and great, but it should be subordinate to Torah study. So by minimizing or reducing some work hours and replacing with Torah study hours, that shows your love and commitment to Torah, and that's what he's advocating over here, and that would be the Chiddush. Then he says, "V'hevi shfal ruach b'fnei chol adam." You should be exceedingly humble in front of everybody. Again, this seems kind of like old news. We had said earlier in this parak in the fourth Mishnah, "Ma'od ma'od hevi shfal ruach." You should be exceedingly of humble spirit. So what's this coming to add? So maybe it will be that he's talking about Talmud Torah, and therefore he's saying that you should be shfal ruach b'fnei chol adam, meaning you should be ready to learn from anybody. You shouldn't think that you are greater, better, smarter than them, and therefore, you know, can't learn from them. No, you can learn from everybody. That would actually be a chiddush relative to what I said before, but then becomes kind of like what we said, Ezu Chacham. What does it mean to be a Chacham? Alone Mikol Adam, the one who learns from everybody, and this memra would be sort of consistent with that memra of Ben Zoma back at the beginning of this parak. Vim Batalta Min HaTorah. And now, if you were idle from Torah study, you didn't study when you could, Yesh Lecha Batelim Harbe Kenegdecha. So then there's plenty batelim to confront you. So two basic approaches to this Mishnah. One approach is, there's a lot in the Mishnah. One approach is that if you're looking for excuses, there's no end to them. If you find a way to, you know, have a reason not to learn, there'll be never ending supply of reasons not to learn, because there's so many things that need to get done in this world. You'll never get them all done. So therefore, if that's your attitude, you'll never get to learn. So that's one kind of approach. The other approach is that this is a little punitive. It's saying essentially, if you elect to not learn Torah when you could, the consequence will be Hashem will punish you by sending more things that will distract you from learning. And in fact, the Bar Tanura learns that Batalim, his second shot is, the Batalim are Harishayim v'chayos raos, terrible people, wicked people, and wild animals. Those are the Batalim. And through them, Hashem will punish you to keep you from learning, as like a punishment for not committing to the Torah, kind of along the lines of Im azveni yom yozmaim azveka, if you abandon me for a day, I'll abandon you for two, kind of thing. Now, the last part of the Mishnah says, V'im amalta b'torah, if you indeed exert yourself in Torah, yesh lo sachar harbet li ten lach, then Hashem has plenty reward to give you. So, beyond the sort of the obvious understanding, some learn that this is again going in line with his advocacy for replacing work with learning, and he's saying you might feel you're missing out because you're learning, you're working less. So he's assuring you, even in Olam Hazeh, in a Gashmi sense, in a material sense, Hashem can reward you anyways, meaning Hashem can make it up to you. So either you get promised from elsewhere, or Malach Tanah de Acher, your work done from other people, or you'll be more efficient, or you have bracha and your pranas yududu, and so on. So Hashem could reward, you know, in this world for your sechar in this world, you don't lose out. The other approach is the schar here. We're talking about here is reward in the hereafter. The point is, of course, that Hashem has ample reward in the hereafter for those who commit to Talmud Torah here. And if you want to know what is the chiddush of that, so the idea would be, here we're saying, yesh lo, he, Hashem, like kind of personally. Meaning, when Hashem gives reward for Talmud Torah, unlike punishment or other kind of mitzvahs, perhaps, besides Talmud Torah, Hashem gets personally involved. There's no shaliach, there's no malach, nothing's intermediating between the recipient of the good and the source of the good. It's direct from Hashem to the recipient. One other thing I want to point out here is that it says, im amalta b'torah, if you worked hard in Torah. It doesn't say, im lamadata Torah harber, if you learned a lot of Torah. It doesn't say that. It says, if im amalta. So amalus means like exertion, hard work, as opposed to how much you actually learned. So this is like aligned with the notion of lefum tsara agra, which we'll get to later on. That according to the tsar, the effort, exertion, suffering is the reward. So to hear, according to the Amelus, if a person exerts himself, regardless of actually how much he walks away with, as long as he tried his very best, to the extent that he exerted himself, he will be rewarded by Hashem, as Hashem in the world to come.